So after that conversation with Karen in the last video, and if you've also worked through that exercise that we shared with you, and also if you've been following along and you've heard my story of identity crisis, I'm hoping you're able to start being able to appreciate that thoughts create things. Sometimes our own worst enemy can actually be ourselves. We don't actually have anything tangible or anyone tangible holding us back in life. It's actually just ourselves, purposefully and intently not doing the things that we want to do because of thoughts and feelings. Now, on a practical level, all right, this is complete insanity, isn't it? But this is how we all experience life. All right, so what do you think, honestly, your main primary role as a life coach is gonna be? That's right, encouragement. Life coaches have got to be encouragers. We don't need to have all the answers. We just need to be good at asking appropriate, relevant questions, remaining present with our clients, respond to what they say. As long as we're not trying to fix them, be their hero, be their guru, we will be just fine, I promise you. Yes, granted, it takes a little bit of practice, but we all get there in the end. Just want to share with you another story, if that's okay. And you might be asking the question, Kane, why do you tell stories? I hate stories. Just give me some academic information. Well, the reason why I tell stories is because stories have kind of been the vehicle that one generation has passed on its knowledge and insights and understandings onto the next for generations, for pretty much millennia. Stories are one of the most effective methods of putting across points. Why? Because I'm guessing when we tell stories or when we hear stories, we're all able to relate to at least one or more of the characters in a story. So it's through us relating to stories that we make more sense of our own inner world. So as a life coach, my friend, get good at telling stories, especially your own. It's not that when we tell stories about ourselves, we are coming from a place of defeatedness or anything like this, right? We would refer to this, or the right term for telling of our own story is self-disclosure. We've got to make sure that we are disclosing of ourselves in appropriate ways and at appropriate timings. Say, for example, if a client is in the middle of telling us their story, it's absolutely crucial that we don't jump in and say, oh, yes, I know how you feel because I had this similar experience. Then what you can have is a bit of an interesting dynamic happening in a relationship where the coach becomes the client or the victim or something like that, becomes a little bit distorted. So we tell stories for the purpose of leading people into greater depths of insight to make better sense of their own inner worlds. So back when I was a boy, right, on school holidays here in Scotland, the weather was always a little bit unreliable. Most years there was a Russian circus would come to town. I was born and raised in a city called Dundee here in Scotland. And every year I'd get taken to the circus, and to be honest, I was never particularly impressed. The only thing that I really ever liked watching was the animals. I didn't like the trapeze artists or anything like that. I think that was just because my sister did, so it wasn't ever going to be appropriate back then for me to like the same things as my sister because I was a boy. So I was always interested in the lions. When the lions would come out, you'd have lion tamers, you'd sometimes have bears, and sometimes you'd get elephants. Now, I loved the elephants, one of the largest mammals on the face of the planet. And what I used to wonder was how it was that one of the circus masters, the circus masters could tame elephants to walk, you know, just to sit and catch peanuts and do all these sorts of tricks. I thought, how could you possibly train an elephant or an animal like this to do and follow orders at our will? And it was actually a few years ago that I actually looked into this. And what I discovered was when a circus or a circus master is looking to adopt a new elephant into its arena or whatever, then it'll go to one of the African nations where elephants are born. And generally, there's these charity groups that will save or taken young baby elephants whose parents have perhaps been killed by poachers or something like that. All right, now what a circus master will do is they'll obviously make a large donation to the charity, take the elephant, and then ship the elephant back to their home nation. When an elephant is young, like most young people or young animals, they're full of beans, full of life, And in order for an elephant or a little human being to be trained, we must teach it about itself, what it's capable of, what it's okay to do, what it's not okay to do, what it must do, what it mustn't do, what it can do and what it cannot do. All right. Some people would refer to levels of training such as this as manipulation. Other people wouldn't. Other people would deem it okay. Anyway, when the baby elephant is now back in the home nation of the circus master or the trainer will attach a bit of rope or a bit of chain around the neck of the elephant and then attach that chain to a picket or a peg and then drive that right down into the ground. Now, here's the thing. When the baby elephant is young, what it's going to do, it's not going to be aware of any limitations that it has. So it's going to try to tug and pull away and break free from the peg and the chain. But when it's young, it's physically not going to be strong enough to break free. Now, the elephant trainer knows that the elephant isn't going to be ready to start being trained until it stops resisting and fighting and trying to break free from the peg. Because what the circus or the elephant trainer knows is that the second or the day that the elephant stops trying to break free is the day that the elephant has learned that it's not strong enough to break free. Now, remember the identity crisis story that I shared earlier on? It's kind of like we can have a few experiences in life, isn't it? We can have one that makes no sense to us. We can have two that's similar. There might be a bit of a thing going on there. If we have three though, we start identifying a trend. And in the same way, if an elephant is trying for days or weeks to break free from a peg, but just to no avail, is physically not able to, eventually it's going to give up because it's learned that it's not strong enough to break free. Now, fast forward 15 or 20 years, little baby elephant has become big, fully grown up elephant. Now, it gets walked into the arena with a chain around its neck. But what do you think the elephant is going to do once that chain gets attached to a picket in the ground? Well, in reality, the elephant could stand up and just frog march out of the tent, out of the arena whenever it wants to, and it could most likely trample over a couple of spectators on the way if it chose to. But it doesn't. Why? Because the second that chain is around the elephant's neck, and as soon as that chain is attached to a picket in the ground, the elephant doesn't even try to move. Because it knows, it learned a long, long time ago that it's not strong enough to break free from the peg. What this story has hopefully helped you just to gain a deeper appreciation of is how it is that limiting beliefs are born within us in life. All beliefs are just things that we've learned. You know, sometimes we can learn inaccurate information. Sometimes there is a whole load of truth out there in the big bad world that we haven't yet experienced. Many people fall victim to this idea that the way that we see things is the way that things are, and what we think is true is true. My friend, nothing could be further from the truth more often than not. So, if by now you're able to identify where our beliefs come from, it's important that we now start looking at where beliefs actually start. Because beliefs have to start somewhere. We're not just born with beliefs, because as babies, same as baby elephants, we're all born a clean slate. So, and remember the identity crisis story? I had one experience, two experiences, three experiences, and then I started learning that I wasn't suffice, I wasn't enough, not skilled enough, not strong enough, not competent enough, not lovable, all these kinds of things. I believed I was insignificant. Now, none of these things were true, but back then I believed that they were. They all started with the thoughts that I was a-thinking. Think back to that last conversation I just had with Karen. I asked her what was actually holding her back in life. Well, if there was a chain tied around her neck and this chain was attached to a picket in the ground and Karen was saying, well, it's actually a chain and a picket that's holding me back, well, that would be a tangible thing. But all this actually held Karen back in her life from being the kind of person that she wants to be for other people are some thoughts and some feelings. All right, so they're not tangible things. They're just thoughts and feelings. So here I want to give you a bit of an example on how thoughts create things. I want to take you through an exercise, all right, to help you deepen and grow in your understanding and appreciation of this. Is that all right? So, if I'm standing central to the board here, have you ever felt like this? Kind of like you've got a little devil on one shoulder, a little angel on the other. You've kind of like got voices in our heads. Not that we're insane or crazy or anything like this, but have you ever found this place of indecisiveness, indecision? Will I? Won't I? I should, I shouldn't. Can I? Oh no, I can't. I ought to, I ought not to. Maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't. I don't know. I'll just wait around and do nothing and say that I can't or that I'm not sure or whatever. All right. All thoughts come from somewhere. We're going to explore this in a bit more depth in a few videos time. But for now, all I'm going to simply invite you to do is close your eyes, if that's okay. Or you can keep your eyes open, whatever is easier for you. What I'm going to invite you to do is go back to your past, all right? You might find it a bit easier doing this with your eyes shut. Think back to a point in the past, a memory that you have that is just positive by nature, something that you remember, perhaps a really memorable event, or it might be a birthday or a wedding day or a birth of a child or something like this, all right? And now just really close your eyes and focus in on this event. Just think about how you were feeling, who was there, who wasn't there, what was going on, how excited you may have been, what the weather was like, all these sorts of things. And as you focus in on this one event, just become aware of how it is that you are feeling. Just be aware of how you are feeling. Now, if you're focusing on something happy and memorable, exciting, there's a pretty good chance right now that you're feeling pretty good. You're feeling pretty positive, pretty uplifted. So open your eyes back up again and give yourself a shakedown. Now, that was, 30 to 45 seconds. All right. If nothing really happened for you just there, take a little bit of time after the video to really put yourself in that place. All right. Stop and really focus in on a positive, memorable event that happened at some point in the past, maybe even recently in the last 12 months. Because what happens is when we focus in on positive things, on good things, on uplifting things, we feel positive, we feel good, we feel uplifted. That's what we're focusing on. Where the focus goes, the energy flows, and what we focus on, we tend to feel. Thoughts produce feelings. Thoughts produce things. Now, to give you an alternative experience, all right, I'm going to invite you now just to close your eyes once again and focus in on one of the hardest days in your life. This might be a rejection. It might be a hurt. It might be that someone cheated on you. It might be even that a loved person died or left you or something like this. Yeah, granted, this might be a tough one. This might not be something that you like to focus on. I'm going to invite you and implore you to focus on it nonetheless. And just focus right in. Just remember how it was for you back then. Just remember how you were feeling, who was there, who wasn't there. And just become aware of how you were feeling in that moment on that day. And close your eyes, or open your eyes, sorry, once again. If I was a gambling man, I would suggest that how you experienced that second reflecting back to the past was very different from how you experienced the first time you reflected back to the past. When we focus on positive things, events, memories, experiences, we feel good, we feel okay. But when we focus on negative, hurtful events, experiences, memories in life, we feel not so good. All right? Now, let's just come back into life coaching world just a little bit. If you've just experienced that within yourself, could you imagine now what your future life coaching clients are going to be feeling like when they come to you with their goals and hopes and dreams and aspirations for the future, which all people are going to have, all right? But the problem is inside of their mind, they focus on all the hurts and all the woes and all the failures and all the stuff they've had in the past. So the story that they're telling themselves, or the voice that they're hearing inside of their mind, is going to be of this red nature or this little angelic nature, right? Come back to the two voices. One voice tells us, give it a shot. Just do your best. What's the worst that can happen? Just give it your all. Go for it. Do that thing that you want to do in life. And then we have this little voice here that says, remember that time in the past that you failed? Do you remember? No one loves you. You're not likable. You're not strong enough. You're not smart enough. You're not this. You're not that. One voice fills you full of hope and excitement and passion and aspirations and all that kind of stuff. And then one voice just reminds you of all the flaws and imperfections and failures of your past. This is where now self-awareness and self-management start merging into one. If we can appreciate just within ourselves now as coaches how it is that our emotional experience of life is influenced by the caliber of our thoughts and ultimately what we're focusing on, then this is going to enable us to play a crucial role in helping other people to self-manage and regulate themselves. And we do so, and we do this, by simply having conversations like that which I had with Karen in the last video. Now that was quite a straightforward conversation that I had with Karen. But some clients are going to come with the greatest goals. They're going to have 10-page business plans in place with action steps and all that kind of stuff. And fantastic, but sometimes people's plans don't go any further beyond the planning phase, because unless plans turn into actions, then plans are never going to become outcomes or tangible results. So in order for people to feel like they're actually, you know, adding value to the world, they've got to be doing stuff, they've got to be taking action, they've got to be actually making an impact and adding some value, all right, which people are never going to do if they're holding back because they're listening to the voice in their head that's reminding them of all the times that they've failed or that they've not been good enough or something like that in the past. All right, this is where as coaches, we've got to sometimes, it's not about coaching people to actually take action, we've actually got to be coaching people to direct their focus in a more helpful direction. Sometimes we've got to be helping and coaching our clients through the process of just focusing more upon what they do want than upon what they don't, and simply reminding them or inviting them to look and acknowledge what listening to this kind of voice has actually cost them in the past, knowing that people won't change in life or won't commit to changing in life until their desire to change becomes greater than their desire to remain the same. People's desire to change will become greater and more prominent within them once they identify where they've gone wrong. Then change just simply happens pretty quickly. All right, so we've got to understand a few things here. I'm not going to go too psychological on you, but I do want you to gain a grounded understanding of the human psyche, understanding that we can have all of the greatest goals and all of the action steps lined out and all life plans and purposes and all that kind of stuff, which is great, very, very exciting. But we've got to know ourselves. We've got to know thine enemy. We've got to understand how it is that most people sabotage their own best intentions. There's not actually anyone or anything that can really hold us back and prevent us from doing the things that we really want to be doing with our lives. It's just us. It's our thoughts, which produce the feelings that prevent us from ever getting started. There is no chain. There is no picket on the ground. There is no rope. There are no rules apart from the ones that we place upon ourselves. You with me? Interesting exercise. Listen, how about now you start practicing being a coach? This is a very, very simple exercise. How about you go and have a conversation with a friend or a family member or a loved one and tell them, say to them, look, I'm just working through this life coaching program online. I'm looking for someone I can practice a few exercises on to help them grow in self-awareness. Most people will be massively intrigued. So all you do is you take them through the same exercise that I've just taken you through right now. You just simply get them to a place where they're quiet and at peace within themselves, then simply direct their focus. First time towards something that was a great, positive, uplifting event for them, then back out of that, and then again back into something more negative. And if you do this, then you might want to take them back into something more positive again. But it's just about helping them to see how it is that what they focus on influences how they feel on a day-to-day basis. This is actually one of the first steps that we can take towards helping other people grow in self-awareness. You with me? Is this okay? Hope you found this helpful. And make sure you put this exercise into practice. It's really easy, but it can make a massive, massive impact in people's lives who've never looked in this direction before. Is this okay? Fantastic. I look forward to seeing you again in the next clip.